This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashrin Johan. A few days ago, Israel carried out dozens of airstrikes on the Gaza Strip, which took the lives of close to 200 people and counting. While some might say that this is merely a response to Palestinian forces firing rockets into southern Israel, the truth is this is but a latest chapter in a conflict that has been going on for decades as Palestinians try to resist and push back against the violent Zionist regime. In light of these latest developments, many international communities, including here in Malaysia, have come together to show their solidarity for Palestine. But are we doing enough? Are we practicing what we preach? On the show with me today is Puan Sri Date Norma Hashim, Treasurer of Viva Palestina Malaysia, and she's also the Treasurer of the Refugee Emergency Fund in Malaysia. And we also have Ahmad Adam on the line, a Palestinian refugee and community leader here in Malaysia. Welcome to the show. How are y'all doing?
Hello. Thank you for inviting us. We're fine.
All right. Norma, let's start with you. Perhaps we can start by talking about the conflict itself. Can you explain the latest escalation in the Israel-Palestine conflict?
Well, actually, firstly, it's not a conflict. At the moment, what happens in Gaza is a massacre. You know, you have over 200 people killed. 60 children have been killed in 9 days of continuous bombardment, 9 days of bombings. About over 100, 200 bombs are dropped every day. And the position is very unequal. Mm-hmm. Gaza has nothing. It's got maybe homemade rockets. Israel has one of the strongest militaries in the world. They are coming to Gaza with F-15s, F-16s, F-35s. You know, they're dropping bombs, and they have a huge military budget funded by the U.S. So it's very unequal, and it's a massacre now. They have bombed civilian homes and buildings. People are buried under rubble, and they don't even have the equipment because of the siege since 2006, which is immoral and illegal that Israel has put on Gaza, where people in Gaza are living in an open-air prison for the last 15 years. So they can't bring things in. So they have barely enough equipment to dig the people out from the rubble. People are dying there under all the rocks. And it's just crazy. It's a massacre, I call it that. And they have bombed even the Ministry of Social Welfare, the Ministry of Health. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, they bombed the Red Cross. They don't allow the International Committee for the ICRC, Red Cross, to come in, even to Gaza, to assess the damage. Yesterday, they even bombed the biggest library in Gaza as well. The media agency, the Tower, with Associated Press, with Al Jazeera, Sky News, that was bombed as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're trying to just bring, as they say, bring Gaza back to the Stone Age. It's a very unequal fight, if you call it that. Yeah. And this is the result of state-institutionalized terrorism, to me, because terrorism means inflicting violence on civilians. And this is exactly what Israel is doing. So people may say, they like to frame the narrative as Hamas being a terrorist organization. Mm-hmm. But it's very clear here that Israel is the terrorist here. You know, it's extremely one-sided. And you have over 200 people killed. Children, I mean, this is crazy. Whole families being murdered in one time, in one bomb. Mm-hmm. People are going to sleep in one room with their children. So if they say, if we're going to die, we're going to die together. You know, and yesterday night, I spoke to our staff in Gaza because, you know, we have an office in Gaza. And he was saying something about what we wanted to do. And then he said, but can we settle this? Because I may not be alive tomorrow. You know, this is just, you know, it's very heart-wrenching. And what about the people like Ahmed Adam, who have family there? I really don't know how he feels. I have friends who have lost the entire families in the last attack, 2014. Do you know that anyone in Gaza who's over 12 years old has been through 4 attacks?
That's terrible.
It's terrible since 2008, 2012, 2014, and now. I mean, what kind of life is it? You're just like constantly in trauma. Everybody knows someone who's been killed in your family. It's just terrible.
Aman, how do you feel? Do you have family and friends back home? What are they going through? What's going through your mind this week? What has been going through your mind?
Actually, all my family in Gaza, and my friend also in Gaza, I contacted them the first day of Hari Raya. After that, I lost the connection with them until now. I don't know if they are alive or they die. Every day I'm searching in the list of the martyr and the injured. I cannot find anyone. That's the good news about this. But I don't know where they are. I sent some people to our home. They don't find anyone inside the home because our home attacked also. The situation there is so miserable. Many of my friends get killed by Israel. Many of them get injured. We cannot control or we cannot know anything there. And now they try to cut the electric. They cut the internet. They don't want the show and the crimes, what happened in Gaza, to go out from Gaza. They want everything to stay inside and die inside Gaza. This is what Israel doing everywhere. In the beginning of the war, I was connecting my niece. I find him, he's coming to visit my family. So I don't see him long time. I leave Gaza maybe 15 years ago. Until now, I don't go back. So I ask him, how old are you now? He say, I am 4 wars age. He count his age by war. He stay there 4 wars since he born until now. Situation is terrible there. No one can imagine what's happening in Gaza. Now, while I'm talking to you, I can receive some news from Gaza. They're still attacking until now. There is 2 NGOs office attacked now, and 3 martyrs reach hospital, and more than 10 injured people reach hospital in this second while we recording this meeting. No one can know, or we cannot say it's war. It's not equal. This is not fair to say it's war. War, that means you have tanks, you have aircraft, you have soldiers. They're fighting by homemade rocket and against the biggest army in the world, the high technology in the world. They're fighting them by rocket. This is not equal. And we cannot say that Israel defends themselves. No, it's not defense. We are defending ourselves because they are attack us. They are stole our land. I am refugee since I born. My father, refugee since he is born in our land, in Palestine, he's a refugee. Generation born as a refugee in Palestine while they are in their homeland. This is not fair.
It's just listening to your stories, right? It makes my stomach squirm. But here's the thing, right? It's like you said, we cannot say that, Israel is, is just defending itself. We cannot even call this a war because it's not fair. But there are loads of people who are saying these things.
You can't call it defending. There's no stupid line that American politicians use because it's probably fed into them by the Israeli lobby. Israel has a right to defend itself. How can an occupier defend itself from the people it occupies? Because who is the oppressor? How can you play the victim card when you have gone into people's lands? Don't forget that Israel, when it was like created in 1947, the borders are just there. But what happened in 1967, they have gone to illegally occupy the West Bank and Jerusalem and Gaza. It's all under Israeli control. So this is an illegal occupation. So under the UN, you actually, if you're occupied, if we were occupied in Malaysia, we have a right to fight. We have a right to fight. You know, what happens if, a neighboring country comes in? Of course we would fight. So, of course, if Israel is illegally occupying the West Bank and Gaza, controlling Gaza, even though they're not there, of course they have a right to defend themselves.
For sure.
The Palestinians have a right to defend themselves, not Israel. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the ridiculous narrative that has been fed to the West. I call it the Zionist occupation of the American mind. Now, you know, the system is an apartheid system in Israel, very much different policies for different groups of people. So it's a racist project. And only that's why you see people like Trump supporters, far-right people, they understand this and they support these kind of policies, you know?
But what is baffling to me is it's that it's not just the Trump supporters who are saying that. Because if it is just the Trump supporters who are saying that, we can just sort of brush it off and say, yeah, these are the far-right, you know, Trump people being Trump people. But the thing is, we see even politicians like Andrew Yang. We've seen people who are really inspiring, like Greta Thunberg. She didn't say anything. She wasn't in support of Israel, but there is this hesitance by a lot of people to lend their support to Palestine, maybe because they don't understand. And what you hear all the time is people who say, I cannot stand with Palestine because they attacked Israel too. And violence is wrong, period. Norma, how do you respond to these kinds of arguments?
Well, I think you have to equip yourself with knowledge, you know. We all have to speak out and people have to learn. You can't just like close your mind to it. I think it's very obvious now with the social media. It's very obvious what's happening. So the people who shut themselves out for it do it voluntarily because they don't want to, because maybe of racist tendencies or this white supremacist kind of views. And, you know, you do get the basis of Zionism is racism anyway. So this cuts across, you know, the world. There will be people who are pro racist policies. Yes.
The problem, it's in the media. Before this year, maybe the people not educated, not they don't have that knowledge. But in this war, or all the people, especially in Gaza, they have high educated. Now they learn more language. Our case and our defend reach more people, and they know the real story from our side, not from the Zionist side. Now we're fighting actually not Israel only, or not the Zionists. We're fighting the whole world. America, Israel, UK, all this, and especially Facebook, watch what they are doing. They restricted and control our contacting media. They block our accounts. They're fighting us. They're controlling everything in this war. Actually, I was working with Facebook for 2 years. And after that, I left that because I cannot handle their policy. If I want to answer anyone who talking about fight or Israel defends themselves, defense from who? From beginning since 1980, since I born, we was fighting by rocket, and they killing us by live bullet. They using F-16 helicopter, F-15, F-35, a true rocket, fighting rocket by F-16. How we can say that they are defending themselves? It's not fair, not equal. They cannot say that. In the beginning, they are the highest army in the world, have tanks, have F-16, the most highest technology, reach Israel, the first country. And now America gives them $7.5 billion tanks and aircraft and this thing. For what? To attack Gaza, and still to kill the people in Gaza. They want to erase all Palestinian people from this land. That's what they are planning. If we come to the history, since they came back to Gaza, as they come as a refugee to Gaza, they come as a refugee and we accept them. We give them to stay in our land with hope and goodness. But what they are doing, they are like a dog. You bring him inside your home after you feed him. He kick you outside. That's what they are doing. And US, UK, and the other countries, they a clapping hand for them. They have a land now. Land for who?
I actually called, I spoke on the phone last week to someone from Sheikh Jarrah. Mm-hmm. As you know, Sheikh Jarrah is one of the neighborhoods in East Jerusalem,
right,
subject to ethnic cleansing. So it happened that I know her auntie, and the auntie called me when she had visited. So Muna al-Kurd is one of the people who live in Sheikh Jarrah. She has lost half of her house a few years ago to Israeli settlers. The person who took her house, they're a group of settlers, and they come from Brooklyn in America. Seize her home, and they are funded by a settler organization, and they are armed. So they are paid to terrorize the Palestinians in the neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. So currently, the families there in Sheikh Jarrah, the ones who are remaining, are fighting. They went to court. They have applied to the ICC to stop Israel taking over their homes now, the remaining homes in Sheikh Jarrah. Because basically, Sheikh Jarrah is in Jerusalem, and there's a policy to Judaize the whole of Jerusalem. And another area next to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, also called Silwan, 300 homes are slated to be demolished, 300 Palestinian homes. So the policy of ethnic cleansing, it's not eviction, you know, it's ethnic cleansing, is to clear the whole area of Palestinians in Jerusalem and to claim Jerusalem as their capital and the whole area for themselves. And that's not allowed under international law because, you know, Jerusalem is to be shared by the three religions. But this is what Israel's plan is, and they're doing it already. So armed settlers, every day I get videos from Gaza, as well as the West Bank and Jerusalem. Last night, it was terrible. There are armed gangs of Israeli settlers going around. They're protected by the Israeli army. They have guns. They shoot Palestinians. And they are called lynch mobs as well. Every night, the violence now, it's really heightened up. You know, this is a very explosive situation at the moment. The only thing good is that there are so many pictures coming out that the rest of the world are now very aware compared to the past. The past three attacks in Gaza, for instance, they were publicized, but not to this extent now. Now, I think even though you have Israel has the military superiority, but Palestinians have the moral superiority and the moral advantage. You know, so in this case here, you have solidarity with the people, and it's very clear now that there's moral authority, and civil society movements are all coming out to support the Palestinians. So that's the only good thing, because we have to do this now before it's too late, because you know Israel is pursuing its apartheid policy and ethnic cleansing at a faster pace now. They seem to be in a hurry as long as they can get away with it.
Certainly. All right. Let's go for a quick break. I'm speaking with Puan Sri Dato' Norma Hashim of Viva Palestina Malaysia and Ahmad Adam, a Palestinian refugee, on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Puan Sri Dato' Norma Hashim of Viva Palestina Malaysia and Ahmad Adam, a Palestinian refugee. And we are talking about the ongoing Palestinian humanitarian crisis and if we are doing enough for our Palestinian refugees here in Malaysia. So, Ahmad, let's talk about the situation in Malaysia. How long have you been in Malaysia and why did you decide to seek refuge here?
I am here in Malaysia around 9 years or more, going to be 10 years. I came to Malaysia because I hear Malaysia, a Muslim country, and they are helping Palestinians, they're loving Palestinians. So I decided to come to Malaysia, and also I hear from my friend, they are Palestinian, they get a nice trip here in Malaysia and the situation is good and they are allowed to work and everything. But when I reach to Malaysia, the situation is totally different here. Especially when you come to Malaysia and after that you become illegal. You broke your visa and you cannot go outside without going to immigration in this situation. So now in Malaysia, refugees, they're not allowed to work. They don't have access to education. They don't have access to health. They don't have access to anything here in Malaysia. And when we ask, how can they survive? They work illegally. And when they catch by immigration or police, they will be arrested for a while. And after that, they will be released. And this is for who holding UNHCR card. For who have a appointment card, he will be detained to his home country. In some cases, we ask like some NGOs and like Sohakom and other NGOs to be in this case because some people, they cannot be detained to their home country. They run away from military in their home country, and if they go back there, they will be arrested or they will be killed. So situation here for refugee, it's not that great as we hear before 10 years and as it was before 10 years. The situation there at that time, here in Malaysia, maybe it was 30,000 refugee or less than that. So no one can notice them when they are working or they're going out or whatever. But now when we're talking about 200 over 1,000 refugee, we can talk about maybe 120,000 family here in Malaysia. You can see them everywhere. If you walk in the street, you can find this Arab, this Rohingya, this from Pakistan, this from this country. So you can notice them. And if you go to any restaurant, you can notice that they have a foreigner worker. You can imagine that they are a refugee. So they will suffer, especially if immigration follows them. The refugee now, they get help from NGOs like Viva Palestine, Care Refugee, Rift Team, and many, many other NGOs here. But as a Palestinian here, we need more help here. Because you see now, if we decide to go back to Gaza or to Palestine at all, it's war there. So it needs 20 years to rebuild Gaza again, to find work. So if you go there, if you think or plan to marry or to make a family, where to find a house, you need to work or rent a house or build a house. You need a huge amount of money to go there. So most of the refugees, they decide to stay in Malaysia and try to work. We wish that the government allow us to work here in Malaysia as a refugee, or allow the Palestinian as a Syrian refugee, get IMM13, it's through Mahar NGOs. They are allowed to work, they are allowed to go to Malaysian school, they are allowed to access to health. So it's better than nothing here. And we wish that they allow us to work legally and give us visa here in Malaysia. We will pay tax, we will pay rent, we will pay for medical insurance and everything. So the benefits, it's on the two sides, not only for refugee. He will get benefit to work. No, it's also for government. Ask the refugee to pay for their visa fee, for their family visa fee, for tax, for medical insurance, for everything. So the money he get from his work, he will pay it again inside Malaysia. It's recycling money inside Malaysia through a refugee. So no need to go and work in a black market illegally, and in the end, the money will be in Malaysia. They will spend it in Malaysia. So we hope that the government give us any special document allowing the refugee, allowing the Palestinian to work here in Malaysia and access for education. We have here around 600 child, they don't go to school. Maybe 6 or 5 years, they don't go to school. They just go to education center like in Sahabat or Amasarai and Ambang, but it's not enough for 500 child.
Norma, what do you think? I mean, it's easy to go on Twitter and say, you know, we stand with our Palestinian brothers and sisters, you know, solidarity with Palestine, all these kinds of things, right? It's easy. But it's another thing to actually cultivate an environment through policymaking, through education, that's actually welcoming to refugees, that actually empowers them. How is Malaysia doing in this regard? Are we doing enough?
Well, I live by this mathematical formula, talk minus action equals zero. I'm the treasurer with this NGO called the Refugee Emergency Fund here in Malaysia, and we have cases coming from we work with community leaders and caseworkers. We get 1 to 2 cases every single day, so you imagine how many hundreds of cases we've helped in the last few years. People come here. I mean, yeah, Malaysia lets refugees in. I mean, it's good because they're fleeing from situations where they can be killed from persecution. But the thing is, you know, you can't let people come in here and then not let them fend for themselves. Where's the dignity that you allow them, you know? You don't let them work. how can they maintain a dignified life? We have to, it's mutually beneficial, as Ahmed Adam says, it's mutually beneficial to allow them to work and earn and help the economy. So what we face every day at the Refugee Emergency Fund, people are asking us for basic necessities, money for rent to face because they're getting evicted on the streets. And this is very real. Every day it happens to a refugee who hasn't been able to pay rent, because especially since the COVID crisis, people have not been able to get work. And now, you know, people are more careful about hiring refugees because it's illegal. So even in the past, when refugees work, when it's illegal, they get exploited by employers. They get paid very little. Sometimes they don't get paid at all when they get injured in accidents, because we have cases brought to us as well. Construction workers who have been injured, who have broke their legs, they're just abandoned by the employers who say, okay, now you can't work, you don't have any money to be paid. So, you know, it's terrible now, this exploitation, and they're very vulnerable. So people come to us for basic things like rent money, for food. Also, it shouldn't happen. Many cases are for healthcare. So we have cases of people with cancer, and they, when they go to the government hospital, they have to pay first-class rates for a third-class bed. So we need to, at least the government has to make a policy, even if they don't want to sign the 1951 the UN Refugees Convention, which gives them the rights to healthcare, education, and all that. At least let the refugees work. Help them maintain a dignified life. And also be able to pay for their own self. They don't like to ask us for money. I mean, there are not many NGOs here doing good work, giving free schools, food, shelter. But it's not that the refugees want to ask for money. They would rather work. And I think this is a sensible way forward. Yeah.
So how do we achieve that? What changes do we need to see from a policy standpoint going forward?
I hope the government will make a change in the policy. I mean, it's been talked about for a long time. I don't think it's something that is such a major thing to implement, just to allow employment, because it's not even like the next step that we're asking for them to have access to government schools or free treatment in hospitals. Maybe that can come later. I mean, you know, if the country feels that it has the prosperity to share, which it should. I think that the only way that we can be a good, thriving, healthy society is for everyone to have equal right.
For sure. All right. Before we wrap up this conversation, do y'all have a final message to leave us with? Ahmad, let's start with you.
Actually, I hope here in Malaysia, and as I see before 9 or 10 years, the situation, it's not much different. It's just a political issue. I wish that the people come back again, unity back again. We wish all the best for Malaysia here. And we love Malaysians as they love us. They stand with us since I born. I remember that Malaysia stand with Palestine here. So we wish that they are standing with us for the end. They're standing with the refugee, helping the refugee to the end. We don't need just a political issue or for election. And we, after that, the refugee will suffer. Maybe the political scare that if they allow refugee to work, they will bring more refugee here to Malaysia. The people will hear that Malaysia allow refugee to work. Okay, let's go to Malaysia. No, we wish that they allow to refugee who staying now or staying before 4 years, 3 years in Malaysia, staying here. Much people or more the family have 3-4 child here in Malaysia. This is the smallest family I have in my community as a Palestinian representative. Some families, 10 kids, 10. This is how you will survive. Some of them, they go to work in a traffic light, they're selling flowers, selling food to survive or to pay their house rent. And in this coronavirus, no one works. The people suffering so much. If we don't get the help from the NGOs, Viva Palestine, Care Refugee, Rift Time, and other NGOs, the people here, you will see them go out to work and die. They don't care. They want to feed their kids.
Yeah.
Norma, what about you?
To me, there's no end to Palestinian suffering. until we end Israeli occupation, Israeli apartheid, and settler colonialism. And once you do that, the Palestinian refugees would want to return to their land. And when there's peace in Palestine, the Palestinians will want to go back. They want to go back even now, but they're not allowed to, you know, because Israel doesn't allow Palestinians to return. They allow any Jew from anywhere in the world to go to Israel and become a citizen. No Palestinians are allowed to go back, even if their grandparents had lived there for generations. They're not allowed anyway. So we need to see an end to this settler colonialism and this occupation of Palestine.
For sure. On that note, Ahmad, Norma, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you very much. Thank you for giving us a voice.
I've been speaking with Puan Sri Dattin Norma Hashim of Viva Palestina Malaysia and Ahmad Adam, a Palestinian refugee. And we were talking about the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Palestine and whether or not we are doing enough as Malaysians for the Palestinian refugees who come here. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app and on BFM.my. You've been listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.